All right. Good evening, everybody, and it's my great pleasure to welcome Joe Natale, CEO of Rogers. Before we get started, please note that all important disclosures, including personal holdings disclosures and the Morgan Stanley disclosures, appear on the Morgan Stanley public website at www.morganstanley.com/researchdisclosures or at the registration desk. So Joe, it's been a strong year for Rogers. It's been a strong year for Canadian telecom, wireless, cable, wireline. Overall, I think we continue to see better trends in Canada than in the U.S. So take us through what we should expect for 2019 and what you're really focused on.
Sure. Well, first and foremost, continue to leverage the momentum that we have right now in the business, in the industry at Rogers. We had a very strong year across all parts of our business. And the wireless front, there's continued growth opportunity in terms of the macroeconomic trends in Canada, the penetration growth, the opportunity to drive lifetime value and drive ARPU economics. So we'll continue pushing on that front in wireless. At the same time, in wireless, really start to drive out some of the economic use cases around 5G. We have a lot of 5G trials planned. A lot of theses that we're looking to substantiate and really kind of understand more about before we continue the next stage of investment through 2020. On the cable front, we launched Xfinity last year. We had a great sort of introduction of Xfinity. We're seeing some strong early signs in terms of the ARPA economics. Around customer reaction has been fantastic. The net promoter score, likelihood to recommend, as we call it, has been very strong for the product, so it kind of bodes well for the future as we go from the initial launch to what follows. And then we've got a pretty exciting roadmap on the heels of that with respect to managed Wi-Fi and the connected home roadmap that comes naturally with the platform. So we're very excited about that. It's an important investment cycle for the cable business, and we think it will fundamentally change the underlying cash economics of that business. And then continue to build the momentum and the strength of the team. We've got a great team, a team that's worked together now for almost 2 years, and we've established a great working rapport, and we continue to kind of work hard to keep firing on all cylinders.
Right. Well, you talked about some of the highlights there. We saw the churn reduction in the quarter, but maybe just revisit when you came on board the goals that you set out initially in terms of improving the customer service and others. How far along are you, and what is still more to do there?
Yeah, I think we've made a great first set of steps on that front. I'm really proud of what the team has accomplished overall. You look at it from a few perspectives. On the wireless front, our postpaid churn improved by 10 basis points. And we had some of the best churn and loading numbers in almost a decade last year. And that's due to the hard work that the team put forward. We saw a strong overall customer satisfaction score, strong growth in digital adoption as an organization, the use of our digital properties, our mobile apps, as a result. And kind of the underlying statement, as you've heard me say before, Simon, is that customer service improvement comes hand in hand with margin expansion. And you've seen, we've improved overall margin by 130 basis points last year and 200 basis points over the span of the last 2 years. So the assumption that you can drive both together is holding true for us. I think there's still lots of opportunity. We live in a target-rich environment around this front, and so we're going to keep pressing on that front. We think it will come forward in improved continuous churn reduction, therefore lifetime value, and it will come forward in terms of customers staying with us longer and buying more of our services. It is sort of the very important equation to the future of this business. As the base grows, do a much better job of managing that base of customers.
Great. You talked about the industry growth in the wireless sector, and I think it's a question I get a lot in the U.S. is why has Canada lagged
Yeah.
The U.S. for so long. And even in the U.S., we're seeing strong subscriber growth. But, you know, what are the factors that, you know, have kept you in the high 80s and, you know, way behind it? I mean, do you think there's a potential to even accelerate beyond what we have here today?
I think there's no structural reason why Canadian penetration can't achieve U.S. levels in the fullness of time. If you go back to the very beginning of the wireless industry, we've always seemed to have been, you know, a few notches behind the U.S. in terms of the march towards greater penetration. So we sit around 85 to 87% penetration today. The U.S. is roughly at 120. And I think there's opportunity to continue growing on that front. On top of that, we're seeing roughly 2% immigration growth in Canada. And that's bringing not just a greater population, but a population of information workers that are technology savvy and want more access to technology as a whole. We're seeing the phenomena around two devices take root in Canada, which took root in the U.S. many years ago. And so we think there's great opportunity on all those fronts. And bear in mind that Canada has some of the best networks in the world. You know, consistently we're ranked top two or three internationally in terms of capability. You know, the average network speed in Canada is 2x the U.S. across a landscape that's very sparsely populated, as you know, and very difficult to cover across five time zones.
So I think the one of the areas that we do get questions is around competition. Obviously, Freedom has, you know, made some strides here in the last few quarters, but you've all put up good results. ARPA growth has been slowing some. Do you think we're through that kind of, you know, dilution from some of the bigger buckets, and ARPA can start to show better trends going forward, and the competitive environment remains fairly stable?
I think, you know, there will always be competitive intensity through seasonal periods. We see it through, you know, holiday periods. I mean, Black Friday was a U.S. thing that became a Canadian thing. All of a sudden, it's become one of our biggest days. So there continues to initially be promotional periods of that nature. I did say in the last call that with all the focus around adding data bonuses, we have seen, you know, the gap widen between average consumption and average bucket size.
Yeah.
And therefore, that will have a moderating effect, you know, until people climb up the ladder of that consumption as a whole. But I do think with the growth in the marketplace and the opportunity in the marketplace, there's room for the market to continue to do well. So we've been competing, against different players, the newer players, for the last 10 years. And, you know, the key to competition is continuous investment. Investment in network capability, investment in distribution, investment in customer service as the bar gets raised each and every year.
And you've deliberately targeted CapEx, not just at preparing for 5G, but also enhancing the 4G experience as well, right?
Absolutely. I mean, we spent a lot of money last year and time building up our 4.5G capability, really readying the landscape for 5G. We formed a very important partnership with Ericsson. They're our 5G partner of choice. And we worked hard to put in all the LTE advanced technology that is 5G ready and can be activated for 5G with software upgrades. So we feel well positioned for the prospect of 5G and where it might take us.
Okay, well, that's a good segue into the trials that you talked about. So just talk about, you know, where you are today and what are the kind of use cases that you think make the most sense at Rogers in the near to medium term?
I think there are two use cases that we're squarely focused on in the short term. One is good old-fashioned capacity and coverage. You look at some of the more densely populated parts of Canada. You look at downtown urban centers where people congregate. More than ever, there is a demand for capacity and speed. And 5G technology and small cells and higher frequency capacity will help serve the needs there. I think that's the most obvious business case. The second one for us is in the world of IoT. Rogers has been the IoT leader in Canada from the days of, you know, connected devices in 2G and then 3 and 4G. And we've got a natural muscle we've built with respect to the, you know, go-to-market capabilities, the product development capabilities, and therefore, you know, we see ready-made paths for some of the evolution to 5G in terms of connected communities, in terms of some of the vertical industry-specific opportunities as a whole. So those are the two most immediate ones. And then we've got a bit of a watching brief on the whole idea of fixed wireless and where it's going. We're watching very carefully as some of the U.S. players make significant investments in that area. We've certainly done our own trials, and we've worked to create our own sort of pressure testing of the ideas. And as that matures, we may look to, you know, add that to our portfolio and our focus around 5G. But some people talk about that first. For us, it's really about coverage capacity and IoT, with that being something that we're just continuing to evolve in our thinking and role.
How does your spectrum needs kind of play into, you know, that timing? We've got some auctions coming up here shortly.
Sure.
But a little bit behind where the U.S. is in terms of getting the spectrum out.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, for 5G, we believe we need, you know, strong baseband spectrum in low frequency ranges, and we've got, you know, that from previous auctions, and then on top of that, there is an auction coming up in March. And then we need some strong mid-frequency spectrum in the 3.5 gig area. We own some of that right now, and it's going to be repurposed for 5G, and there'll be an auction coming up on 3500 at some point in the next 18-24 months or so, is the view. And then millimeter wave will come thereafter. So, you know, we are, you know, awaiting all three of those spectrum auctions, put together the full complement. And therefore, it'll give us time to evolve our thinking and the technology around 5G. 5G, I believe, for us, Canada, will be much more of an evolutionary investment over time as we populate the various ideas with economics and resources to lay them out to market, as opposed to, you know, the grand opening of 5G ubiquitously across the network. A little different than 3 and 4G happened.
I think one of the things that's helped the carriers some is, upgrade rates have been moderating as people have got more comfortable owning their phones for longer, and I think it's been clearer to people how much their phones actually cost.
Right.
So can you just talk about what your experience has been and how you see that, you know, evolving over time?
I think there's no question that the useful life of smartphones has been growing, both in reality and perception for consumers as a whole. We're seeing people hold on to devices even longer than before, and we're seeing a secondary market evolve for devices, a refurb or resale market that's actually helping drive penetration even further as device affordability kind of widens on that front. We're seeing different constructs show up in the market, like residual value plans that will give you money back at the end of the contract for returning the phone. So I think it's actually good for the industry to have better appreciation of the value and expense around handsets, and therefore, you know, create a much longer useful life around them. I think, you know, we'll continuously find ways of creating affordability options for our customers, all the way up that spectrum from, you know, the most basic phones to the most expensive phones. It's part of our job, is to keep creating those opportunities. Some might be new, some might be used phones, but I think it'll help to moderate some of the investment in upgrades, both for acquisition and retention, as a result of creating that broader ecosystem.
Right. All right, well, let's pivot over to cable, if we could. You talked about the Xfinity Ignite TV, and perhaps you just provide a little kind of level set of where we are today. How far have you rolled this out, and-
Yeah.
You know, what are you experiencing so far in terms of customer adoption?
You know, we were very thoughtful last year around a very considered launch, and it's gone very well. The goal of the launch was not quantity, but the quality of the experience and the capability so that we could ramp thereafter. The team did a terrific job of launching what I think is a very high-quality experience for our customers. Not just the product itself, but all the support around it, from installation to the digital experience, et cetera, around it. And we're seeing some really enticing and exciting early indications around the product itself. We're seeing significant lift in average revenue per household, the Ignite household that is enjoying the product as a whole.
And it's still in the premium packages. Is that how you're positioning it?
It's still in the, you know, it's available kind of at the 150 meg profile or higher. And we've intentionally kind of done that to, you know, manage to a volume level and also to support the brand and recognition of the product for the quality that it is. I think it's a great product, a high-quality product, and when you have a great high-quality product, you don't discount it out of the gate. You kind of manage it to the value proposition that you're putting forward. But apples to apples, better ARPA characteristics, much stronger material change in net promoter score, and a much more material advantage in terms of early life cycle churn. We manage churn through the entire life cycle, but we watch churn very carefully in the first 3 or 6 months of any product, of any sale, and very strong characteristics on all those fronts. But what we're most excited about is the roadmap that follows. I mean, you think about the fact that there are 10,000 engineers in Philadelphia at Comcast working on a very robust roadmap.
Yeah.
And we've got capability drops coming throughout the course of time. We'll be launching Amazon Prime as part of an offering very soon. We've got managed Wi-Fi capability, reminiscent of X5 that's coming very soon. We've got the X Home connected home platform to connect all kinds of other devices in the home. And, you know, what it's about, it's really taking our strong internet capability. We've got a 1 gig internet capability across our entire footprint and marrying it with a number of reasons to buy and reasons to stay that are feature-rich for the household. We're trying to change the narrative away from just speed to around here are all the things you can do to change the way you live and conduct your life given this technology and this tool set that's available to you like never before, whether it's about home security or entertainment or managing your lifestyle as a whole. And we think that will resonate very much with consumers, and that will change the lifetime economics of that business. Couple that with the internet capability that we've had, you know, we've been doing very well. We've grown internet penetration now for the last 14 quarters. And last year, you know, even despite the fact that our major competitor went loud and proud with their fiber to the premise capability in terms of advertising, you know, we had a great uptick in penetration, and our internet net additions were up 13% year over year.
And you're getting people buying up higher speeds as well.
Higher speeds, you know, you go back 5 years, we had 4% of our base for at 100 meg or greater, and that number is now around 60% of our base.
So what are you seeing in terms of broadband-only households? Obviously, it's a big phenomenon here. You know, a lot of cord cutting going on. You're seeing some of it in Canada, but it feels like it's not quite as intense. You know, so how are you kind of catering to that millennial, perhaps, that's happy with a bring-your-own-content type solution?
Well, in the short term, it's important to recognize that cord cutting in Canada is not quite as significant as it is in the U.S. It's roughly about half the volume of cord cutting on a, you know, run rate basis. Call it 1.5 to 2% in Canada. I think it's closer to 3.5 to 4 in the U.S., depending on the analysis. And it's a combination of the fact that video ARPU in the U.S. is actually substantially greater than it is in Canada to begin with. I think in the short term, you know, we've got a solution that will change the video experience and bring to bear, you know, all the things that Ignite has to offer, from voice command to cloud PDR to deep integration of Netflix and Amazon Prime and YouTube and others to follow. At the same time, we're gonna be looking at how do we recraft the value proposition. You know, this industry grew up in a place where more was better.
Yeah.
Right? You had sort of small, medium, large, extra large kind of package sets. And now we're migrating to a world where choice is better. So you'll see us evolve the packaging constructs and let people choose more and do more with their content. And I think the Ignite platform is very conducive to that. And I think that'll actually help people step into video entertainment with internet at different levels of consumption, different levels of packaging.
But presumably, you're still, if somebody moves over to broadband only, the margin profile on broadband is probably a lot more attractive than on the video side of the equation.
Yeah. I mean, our stated goal, we've been very clear about this. If, you know, we believe that the future of this business is in the internet connection. And the economics will all be driven around the internet connection.
Yeah.
And we'll get to a place where, you know, the video entertainment business will be a break-even proposition. And video entertainment coupled with other connected home services that we've just talked about will become the reasons why people see more value in the internet connection versus just speed.
Yeah.
And will change fundamentally the churn and lifetime economics of the business. So we are engineering our business from a cash flow economics point of view to rely on the internet connection as the main source of true cash flow economics. And everything around it becomes lifetime value driven.
Good. Okay. Well, you had a capital allocation move with earnings in terms of a dividend increase the first time in several years, but also highlighted that the policy was gonna be more focused towards buybacks.
Right.
And not necessarily revisiting dividends. So perhaps just talk through, you know, how that's been received by your shareholders and the rationale behind it. And then just talk about the other kind of uses of cash flow.
So, you know, we've been very clear about the fact that the number one use of our cash is to invest in the core business and the future growth prospects of our business. You know, now's the time. Now's the time given the momentum we have, given the cost of capital out there in the debt markets to really kind of make the right investments for the future along the way. And we've proven that we can drive the right economics with those investments. You look at our, you know, wireless business last year, and we took 40% of the revenue and EBITDA growth in the sector. You look at our cable business, and right now the cable business is, you know, sitting at roughly about 35% CapEx intensity. It's a moment in time given we're in the middle of transforming it. We see the resting, you know, CapEx intensity in that business coming down to below 20, somewhere in that zone. So we're determined to use our cash to make those investments to get to the momentum and the operating cash profile that I just talked about. And that's sort of job one. To the extent there's excess cash, then we'll direct it towards share buybacks for all the reasons that you understand fully, Simon, as a whole. On the dividend front, we'll continue to look at dividend increases on a selective basis. But I was trying to be very clear and emphatic that I don't want to get into a place where they become, you know, routinized and that we use up, you know, we use up capacity just to feed the dividend.
Yeah.
Number one obligation is to the future growth of this business, the core business. We don't have any sort of, I call them hobbies planned, any sort of diversification strategies that seem, you know, off the core, off the center. And therefore, you can rest assured that you can trust us to leverage that cash for the right purposes for the future and then return it as appropriate.
Great. All right. We've got time for a couple of questions here.
I was wondering if you could talk about the media business. You have a tough year-over-year comp because of some of the one-time payments, and you also had a difficult year with some of the Blue Jays attendance. So how are you thinking about growing that part of the business?
Sure. You're right, we have a tough comp with the payment from Major League Baseball Advance Media. But the team's done a really good job of architecting the margin and EBITDA economics of that business, continuing to invest in the right properties and ideas and look at some of the OpEx constraints. So I feel we've got a good organic run rate with respect to the media business. With respect to the Jays, I mean, you know, what I've learned about the sports media business, that it all falls to sort of how the season evolves and moves forward. The good thing is that we don't get much value for ownership of the Jays, so it's only an opportunity to surface and increase the value going forward. It is Canada's baseball team, and it's one of the largest baseball audiences anywhere in the league, and we're immensely proud of owning the Jays. And we think we continue to have opportunities to monetize that audience over time. But we are in the rebuilding stage, and that'll take some time to rebuild.
I just wanted to follow up on the Freedom Mobile question. I'm just wondering if you've seen any impact specifically in Western Canada, where you don't have necessarily all the bundles to offer. Just curious if you could share a little bit more color there.
Yeah, we don't disclose sort of regional differences in how we're dealing in the marketplace as a whole, but I think it's fair to say that we feel we're doing well in every region of the country. We don't feel disadvantaged anywhere specifically. And bear in mind that, you know, in British Columbia and the Lower Mainland, we are the incumbent in many ways. You know, the Fido brand's done very well out there for a very long time in multicultural communities, and we've got a very strong presence in that market. So we'll continue to make the right investments in distribution and marketing, and we feel we can continue to win in those markets.
In the back.
Can you talk about some of the margin levers you have that are not top-line driven?
Sorry, I missed the first part.
The margin levers that are not top-line driven?
The margin levers on top, sure. So we've got a number of margin levers at our disposal, but not top-line driven. One is one I've alluded to already. I believe that improvements in customer service and the customer experience go hand-in-hand with margin improvement. Why? Because ultimately you're taking calls out, you're taking truck rolls out. So you think about the fact that average phone call costs us $10 to $12. And when you're taking over, you know, 40 million phone calls a year, there's opportunity there of substantial nature. A truck roll is a few hundred dollars. So taking out, you know, low impact, no value truck rolls is a very immediate benefit. And the list goes on from that perspective. So it's very much a very important lever. The next important lever is that, you know, as an organization, we spend well over $5 billion in procurement, and that's both a CapEx efficiency and an OpEx efficiency opportunity for us as we, you know, we've upgraded the quality and strength of that procurement team, and they're making their way through every single category of commodity, and they're getting some fabulous economics for us in terms of moving money to the bottom line, which creates capacity for CapEx investment. You know, I use the phrase of the team, you know, if we can spend 80-cent dollars, I'd rather do that based on your ability to drive better unit cost economics. And then on expense materials, we're seeing it show up in supplies and consumables throughout the organization. I think there's a big opportunity on that front as a whole. Those are probably the two biggest levers we have from a margin expansion point of view. You know, there are some COGS opportunities that are out there. It all comes down to mix of smartphones and the types of devices people want, and that kind of tends to go up and down depending on where the market power lies.
Great. Joe, great overview. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Simon. Thanks for having me, and thanks for your support.
Great. Have a great evening, everybody.